Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Dentzel. It's Monday, had a beautiful weekend, got quite a bit of disc golf playing this weekend. I played Friday evening. I played from like, I'm serious, from about 3 o'clock until it was almost dark out. So that's, what, 4.5 hours, something like that. I was down at Azalea. Had been practicing for a little while, then my buddy Cameron and his girlfriend showed up. We played for a while, then they left, and then I ran into a guy that I knew who plays disc golf, and I played a little bit with him. And then on Saturday, I've told you I have a disc golf tournament coming up this weekend in Floral City, at Floral Park in Floral City, which I guess makes sense. And myself, Cameron, and his girlfriend went up there on Saturday morning and went up there. So that was about, it's like an hour and a half drive, hour and 45 minute drive. Luckily, I didn't have to drive for once. Let the youngster Cameron do the driving, and we had a good time up there, played well. I'm fairly confident coming into this weekend. So got a lot of disc golf in, did no watching of any basketball, whatever. I may be the only person in the United States that has not watched any basketball over the last 3 weeks. In fact, I don't think that I've watched a college basketball game all season. I don't think. Maybe I watched a couple early pick games. Maybe I found them online or something. But I've not watched. I know what's going on. I know South Carolina, who's in the Final Four, but that's about it. I have read the news. But I did watch some. I watched regular ball golf this weekend. Once we got home from Floral City. I mean, we got back. I mean, we left so early that we got back by like 2 o'clock or something. So I got to watch some ball golf. Phil played well, and then he lost to Bill Haas, who lost to John Rahm, who then lost to Dustin Johnson. So it was a beautiful weekend. Really nice here. Not too windy, just a perfect Florida weekend, and it's going to be beautiful all this week. Not to rub it in or anything. But let's get to the show. You know who didn't have a beautiful weekend? Anybody connected to the AHCA. That's who didn't have. And I include the people who, the Freedom Caucus, these people, representatives, congressmen, congresswomen, who decided they were going to vote against it. Nobody had a very good weekend in politics, I would say. Anybody, Donald Trump to Paul Ryan, to anybody connected to that, anybody just tangentially connected to it, did not have a very good weekend. And of course, it started on Friday. Of course, it technically started Thursday night when Paul Ryan announced that there was going to be a vote. Then there wasn't. And then had the vote on Friday. We're going to have the vote on Friday at like 3:30. And they didn't. And now it doesn't look like they're ever going to vote on it. And it seems like this bill is dead. There are probably some procedural reasons that they didn't want to vote on it. Maybe things that I don't quite understand. But I think overall, I think the reason that they didn't want to bring it to a vote finally is because simply because how badly it was going to look that it wasn't going to pass. Now, once again, I understand there may be some procedural things that go on there. Like if you vote for the bill, then that means something. But just what I think the average American understands is that the reason that the vote didn't happen is because they didn't have enough votes. And really, I think that Paul Ryan should have known that long before Thursday or Friday came around. And I think this is the reason that going back to Thursday, that he caught so much crap that he announced there was going to be a vote when it was fairly obvious that there were never going to be enough votes. There just weren't. And those people, and the problem really, it wasn't a particular faction. I mean, the people that are getting the most attention is this Freedom Caucus. You also have to remember that there were moderate Republicans who weren't going to vote for it either. But it seems like the conservative ones are the people who are getting the most blame now, especially from the White House. To the point where Donald Trump is now, if you're to believe his minions, that he now wants to try to work with those Republicans who voted for the AHCA and Democrats to try to get something through. I told you this I told you that Donald Trump, in the end, is going to feel more comfortable working with Democrats than he is with Republicans. And before you get all excited about, well, he was working with these Republicans and he was fully ready to sign the AHCA and everything. Yes, he was willing to sign something that written by a guy, led by a guy, who Donald Trump was making fun of just 6 months ago. The man has no principles. The man has no character whatsoever. And in that, he's just like about a majority of politicians out there who just wanted to get something passed. You don't hear anything coming out of the White House saying, well, the reason this didn't pass is because it wasn't conservative enough, that it didn't go far enough to repeal Obamacare. You don't hear that, even though that's what Donald Trump campaigned on. Now, you can agree with that. There are Democrats out there. You can agree with that. You can disagree with that statement. But the expectation is when he became president that that was going to happen. Whether or not it was going to get voted for in the House or not. The problem is that he threw his support, and I called this when this happened. I said, I thought that Donald Trump was going to rue the day, a statement I don't usually say, rue the day that he called that bill wonderful. That it was written, and as soon as it was out, he called it wonderful. He should have waited. He should have waited. Because if he had waited 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, and let it all sink in, and every congressman and congresswoman, representative, senator, stake out their positions on it, then he could have been seen, as I think he always wants to be seen, as the guy who comes in and saves the day. In fact, there have been many articles written about him, about Donald Trump, on that's how he manages people. That's why he seems to hire people or appoint people who oppose, because he wants to be seen as the savior. But because he has no political instincts whatsoever, he has no ideology except the liberal one to fall back on, and he knows what he campaigned on, this is what he did, and it totally ruled out any sort of change from that position. He very well could not have called it wonderful, like he did, and then a week from then, or a week ago, say, you know what, I think this bill needs work. He would look like an idiot, and he knows it. So he needed to go full bore with this, and this is what you deserve. This is for those people who voted for Donald Trump, this is what you deserve. And I still put the most blame on him, because I always come back to the same thing. This bill would not have been written this way if a conservative person was president, ever. Now, I'm not saying it would have passed, but at least the promise would have been kept. Instead, Paul Ryan, these representatives, they wanted to have it both ways. They wanted to say that they were fulfilling a promise, but on the other hand, they didn't want to do too much about it because they had a president who they believed wasn't going to sign something more conservative than this, because Donald Trump isn't conservative. I'm going to say it for about the millionth time on here. This bill doesn't get written if Ted Cruz is president or Marco Rubio is president or any, pick some of those other people who ran. It just doesn't. The bill is a reflection of Donald Trump, not of the House, even though I'm not a fan of them either. I'm not going to stand up here and defend Paul Ryan. I continue to say that Speaker of the House job is not one that I would ever want for any amount of money, ever. And I still think to this day that it's a job that I don't think Paul Ryan is the most enamored with. Is that, that's horrible English. I don't think he likes it that much. I think he did it to try to please different factions of his own party. And he should have just stuck to what he did best, was staying in, what was he, Ways and Means or wherever he was, and done that. He was decent over there. Making himself Speaker of the House, or accepting the position, getting voted in, has only decreased his stature in the party. So, you know, it's not like I'm going to have come big to his defense either. But I think he he knew that Donald Trump wanted to make health care and all the people that campaigned on it a primary goal of the new administration, the new Congress, and they threw this thing together. I mean, this thing was thrown together a lot quicker than Obamacare was. Remember, this thing didn't even exist. The only reason it existed is because Hillary Clinton lost the election. That's it. Whereas even with Obamacare, and even with the Democrats controlling the Congress, it took quite a while for them to get that thing through there. Even though in the end they did ram it through, they didn't put it together in 2 months. So on top of it being a humongously bad piece of legislation and not fulfilling the promises that have been many different politicians, whether they're politicians still or they got voted out or whatever happened, this didn't come close to what they've been saying for the last 6 years from the day that Obamacare passed. And that's all that matters. That's all that should matter. And so they have no one to blame but themselves. They wanted to have it both ways. There's an excellent, maybe this needs to take me into the next article. There's an excellent article, and I'm not going to go all into all of it because it's fairly complicated on what needs to be done. It's a fairly good article, but in reading it, I still think, do we really need to do this, all of this regarding, it's still regarding healthcare. It still talks about tax breaks, and this law needs to be changed, and that law needs to be changed, and we need to do this, and need to do that. And that may be all be fine. But why can't we just say the government just gets out of healthcare? Why do you need to – Paterico, and you in the comments section, he got a lot – he or she, I don't even know which – I don't know if it's a guy or a girl. I have no idea. But the writer, Paterico, got some nice compliments in the comments section after this article at redstate.com. But it certainly does seem, once again, like a Rube Goldberg machine when it should be a lot simpler than this. It should just be a lot simpler. And it goes into all, the article goes into all the reasons that people get rejected for pre-existing conditions, because what happens is that people had jobs, then they lost, and they got conditions while they had insurance, then they lost their job, which means they lost their insurance, and then they went out into the private marketplace, they couldn't get insurance because of pre-existing conditions. And ways to get around that, laws to change regarding that. And it has been if you get right down to it, it has been a fiasco connecting employment with healthcare. It seemed like a great idea way, way back then, and it was brought on by market forces that employers were trying to woo better employees by offering them some sort of health coverage. And this goes way back. Way back before Obamacare, way, of course, before Hillary Clinton, way back, maybe even before I was born in 1970. But over time, it was a good idea, but it became a bad idea, not because it changed, but because healthcare changed in the United States, in that insurance companies started taking up more and more and more and more of a piece of the pie. Whereas at the time when insurance health coverage became connected to your employment, most people were still paying for their health coverage out of their pocket. And that creates problems. Whereas if there was a, I wouldn't call it a perfect world, but a different world where there were no insurance companies that covered health issues, and so when a person lost their job, they just keep paying out of their pocket for whatever health problems they had, instead of having to feel like they had to go into the health insurance market. This is how markets change. Nothing stays the same. Just like manufacturing has changed in the United States. It used to be very, very labor intensive, and now it's not so labor intensive. How farming has changed, how construction has changed, and the health market has changed since the time that health coverage and employment became a thing in the 1900s sometime. And it's really put a crimp, I guess, if you're going to believe this article that Paterico wrote, it's really put a crimp in trying to maneuver through the healthcare environment in the United States. And I guess anywhere in the world where this, you know, the situation is similar. There are no easy answers. Yes, no matter what you do, it's going to hurt somebody. But the goal is to get more efficient, faster, better healthcare. Mm-hmm. And the way I think you have to do that is I think you have to get rid of the pre-existing conditions for health insurance. I think that people should still be not allowed. If the health insurance company doesn't want to take them, health insurance company shouldn't have to take them. Now that we've already crossed that line, it's hard to go back the other way. And Paterico in this article talks about that. I know that sucks, but if we really believe that the goal is worth it, that even those people who have pre-existing conditions, at some point because of market forces, will get health care, then this is just a short-term problem. I think the issue is, I think the politicians want to be seen as the savior, and they want to be seen, the Republican ones too, they want to be seen as the heroes. They want to make this pain go away in people's lives. On top of the fact they're not as conservative as I am. And this is what you get. Now, Ted Cruz, speaking of Ted Cruz, having mentioned him earlier, he does have an idea on what needs to be done. And this is something that's interesting to me because we generally think that when a president comes in, we know when a president of the opposite party comes in, that anything that the executive branch was going to do is put on hiatus. It's probably just forgotten. Barack Obama had different priorities than George W. Bush. George W. Bush had different priorities than Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton had different priorities than Bush 41. We know how this all works. And the Trump administration has different priorities than Barack Obama's administration. However, something that remains constant is Congress. Yes, there are elections that happened in 2016. Some senators were up, and of course all the representatives were up for re-election. But the bills don't go away. Anything that is in Congress the day before an election is still in Congress the day after an election. It doesn't vanish like you would see things happen in the executive branch. Well, there is, as Ted Cruz points out, there is still a bill in Congress, and then it's stuck in committee. And the reason it's stuck in committee is because Republicans knew that there's no way it would ever get passed, but they hung it around. They kept it hanging around, hoping that Republicans would win the White House in 2016, of course, then starting in 2017, that they could pull this thing back out. And it's an actual repeal bill that was written and made it into the Senate in 2015 while Barack Obama was president. It's still good. There's no expiration date. It's not like milk in your refrigerator. And the good news is that all of these representatives, Republican representatives, already have their signature on it from the time they voted for it back in 2015, which means most of the people who are in Congress have already voted for it. But the reason it's still in the Senate, once again languishing, is because they knew if it went to Barack Obama's desk that he would just veto it anyway. Well, that bill is still good. And so Ted Cruz's idea is to resuscitate this bill. And the reason is this, and this is kind of funny. It's going to be hard for those people, those moderates, who, for example, who voted against the AHCA because it was too tough, but they voted for, let me rephrase that. It's easy to vote for something when you think it's going to get vetoed. isn't it? And the suspicion is that a lot of these people who voted for this repeal bill, and I think that's even more obvious now, at the time when it happened in 2015, is that people, these representatives, voted for it, even though they didn't like it, but because they knew it was going to be voted anyway, and they could go back to their district and say, hey, I'm all for appealing every single word of Obamacare. And they could do this under the cover that they knew that Barack Obama was going to veto when made it through the Senate, that Obama would actually save their butts. Save some of these representatives' butts. Well, now that bill still exists, but there's a new guy in the White House. Now, don't get me wrong. It may very well be that Donald Trump might veto it as well, because like I said, he's not a conservative. But it is a true repeal bill overall. Certainly a lot better than this AHCA, and it already has all of the House members' signature on it. It's very funny. It's very funny. And see, what has been written at redstate.com this weekend, at hotair.com, a few other places that I've gone, is that what it's exposing is that many of these Republicans who campaigned on getting rid of Obamacare really didn't mean it. They didn't. They thought it was bad and everything else, but on the other hand, they start thinking about their own political lives. They start thinking about these people who got coverage because of Obamacare, and although they might not like that, they start thinking, well, I can't come out against that because it might cost me my office. Well, but they couldn't come out and say that in 2015 because it was not politically safe to say that. But when this bill came along, they could sign on to it and say, yeah, I'm for repealing Obamacare. Whereas at night, when they're staring at the ceiling in bed, they're saying, man, I'm glad that thing's not going to make it through Congress. I'm going to be in big trouble. Well, now we're going to find out, because it's going to be hard for these people then, just a couple years later, to go back on the signature on a bill that didn't change from 2015. The only thing till now, and the only thing that changed was who's in the White House. And then these people will be exposed for who they are, which I think is important at this point. What are they going to do? Are they going to say that they were wrong then, or are they wrong now? Are they going to go against this repeal bill, even though they signed it back then? Or are they going to go along with what they did back then? See, that Ted Cruz, he's very crafty. I know that there are a lot of complaints about him, me included, especially when he decided he was going to support Donald Trump for president. His vote your conscience was nice, but then everything he did after that wasn't so good. But I like what he's doing in the Senate for whatever reason, maybe his own devices, who knows. But he makes a very good point here. And if that bill can still be resuscitated, can be gotten out of committee now that the Republicans can control Congress, we're going to really, really, really find out who those politicians are who really, really, really want to get rid of Obamacare. And my instinct tells me it's going to be a lot less than you think, including a president who you're going to find out was lying to you from day one, which is something that I told you anyway. I will say on the record that I don't believe Donald Trump believes in repealing Obamacare. Not for one second. Not for one second. I remember having this discussion, very short one, with my sister in Orlando back in October about this. Was it October? Must have been October. And it was before the election. And her making the point that he's going to get rid of Obamacare and he's going to... And I said, no, he's not. No, he's not. He said this, he said that. And I think that I've been proven right on that. He doesn't want to repeal Obamacare because he's not a conservative. He doesn't believe in free market principles when it comes to health care. So, this is what you get. I can't help it that you people were fooled. And you believed every word that he said just because you wanted to. That's unfortunate on your part. So, but I think Ted Cruz, like he has done before, I think he's going to, if this happens, he's going to expose the people who really, really believe what, who made promises that they wanted to keep, and all those people who just were saying that to get reelected or get elected in Donald Trump's case. This is a fine mess that we've worked ourselves into regarding this. It's very complex, and I have to tell you that it's tough explaining all of this with just words. This is one of those times where I wish it was TV so we could have maybe a timeline out and some charts, and I could go all Glenn Beck on all of you like he used to do on his Fox News show. This is one of the few times, very, very few times, that I think like this. But I think it's safe to say that not all Republicans are for the total repeal of Obamacare. I think they have a tough time reconciling some of these things. I think they love to talk tough when they know that they're not going to have to follow through with their words, frankly. Now, the question is this. Who is going to get blamed for all of this? I asked my buddy Dave that question this morning. Who's going to get blamed? Is it going to be Paul Ryan? If we're trying to bring something to the floor of the House that didn't have enough votes, is the average American going to look at this and think the reason this didn't happen is because the bill isn't conservative enough? Or did this happen because conservatives are just sticking too hard to the principles and any alleged step in the right direction? And I don't believe the AHACA is, but maybe some of them believe that anything in that direction is better than nothing. That's going to be something that's we're going to have to keep an eye on. Dave replied back to me that he thinks the whole party is probably going to suffer. But that's true. That's probably true in the short run. I'm more interested, though, in trying to figure out who the American people are going to put the blame on ideologically, not politically. I want to know – what I really, really want to know is – where are the American people on this topic? I know they voted for Donald Trump, who claimed that he was going to repeal Obamacare, every single word. But now that that election is over, and we've already had one debacle that happened last Thursday, Friday regarding all of this, I'd like to know from the American people, what do you want? What do you want? If you want repeal of Obamacare, then we're going to have to get rid of the law that says that insurance companies have to pick up pre-existing conditions. As long as that exists, healthcare is going to go in the wrong direction. Now, are you okay with it going in the wrong direction? If you're okay with that, we might as well just stick with what we have. Might as well just stick with it. However, on the other hand, if you think that businesses should be able to stay away from people who are going to put them out of business, then we can talk. We can talk. And I think that that will give the House some guidance on what they should be doing, because I think that very well may be another part of it. I'm not sure that the House members, Paul Ryan included, and maybe even the Freedom Caucus members, really understand where the American people are on all of this. And I know it's, hey, people can change their minds from day to day, week to week, but these politicians are ultimately the representatives for the people. And my idea is that the reason that Donald Trump won, even though he got 3 million less of the popular vote, they went with him because of immigration and then the other comments that he made regarding Obamacare. And I still say, had Donald Trump campaigned on this AHCA bill that was going to be improvement, I don't think the American people, everybody who voted for him, would have been as enthusiastic about voting for him. That's my idea. maybe you have something different. Maybe if Donald Trump had campaigned on this particular bill that I know didn't exist at the time, but doing a little revisionist history, maybe you think he still would have won. And this really was something that the conservatives got in the way of. I don't particularly believe that. I think that the AHCA, which is a horrible letters put, AH, I hate saying those two letters together, is not what the American people envisioned when politicians talked about repealing Obamacare. And I think that that's the main problem here and will continue to be the main problem. That's my idea. Maybe you think something different. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. You just get the feeling that this healthcare stuff is, it's probably never going to go away. This is a topic that I could live to be 100 years old, and I think it's still going to be a huge political issue in the United States, no matter what happens. This is how I feel about healthcare. I think that it's more likely that we get a better tax code in the United States before I die than healthcare ever gets figured out in the United States. I would say that the United States is more likely to get a really, really good handle on terrorism and getting rid of ISIS and all of these people well before healthcare is ever fixed in the United States. That's I don't know how other hosts of their shows feel about that. That's how I feel about it. It seems that those other issues are easier to tackle than this one. In fact, although liberals would say this is related to healthcare, probably abortion probably will also continue to be a topic that will not be settled by the time I live, if I live to be 100, either. Whereas I'd like to believe that we will figure out someday immigration in this country, that we will figure out terrorism in this country. I think that it's much more likely that we figure out a way to rearrange the tax code one way or the other. But this healthcare thing, the more you read about it, the more you see the people react to it, the more you hear politicians talk about it, the more you get the idea that this is always going to be a problem. And because of that, I wonder as a 46-year-old, whether it's ever going to be cheaper again, if we're ever going to go back somehow to a more market-based system. Right now, it's just hard to imagine that. Given the talk, given who's president, given people think they're entitled to stuff, given the idea that some politicians think that private companies should be ordered to take on people who are going to run them out of business, it's just hard to imagine, and that's a dang shame. I can tell you, I can't tell you how happy I am that I'm not in the medical profession these days. I can't tell you how happy I am that I can look at it from the outside, and the only times I need to get involved with healthcare is when I have a problem, or, you know, kind of like last year when my mother was having some problems. You don't know how happy that makes me that I'm just totally outside of that. When I think about all of this, that if the government was getting into the business that I do, whether it's with this show, whether it's with my missing person show, Unfound, whether it's with the writing that I've done, if government was meddling in all of that stuff like it was meddling in healthcare, I would be so ticked, I would be so frustrated, I would be so depressed. And I can't help but think that that's what a lot of people in the medical profession are going through right now. For no good reason. They've been demonized in all of this from the simple fact that you have a president who said, we're not going to let people die in the streets. Well, what does that infer? That people in the medical profession will let people die in the streets. So, horrible. Let's move on to something else. Maybe we need to just get caught up on this, being that it's been a topic the last week. I forget how long this happened ago, a week and a half ago. Tomi Lahren has been permanently banned from the Blaze. I didn't even know this. I have to admit that I did not know this until today. I didn't realize she graduated from UNLV. Now, some of you know, I lived in Las Vegas for 13 and a half years. I used to live within 5 minutes of the campus. The campus is right there on East Tropicana, I should say, East Tropicana. It's right near the airport, McCarran Airport. And I lived on East Tropicana from early 1999 until, let me think about this, June 2005. I lived there for like 6 years on East Tropicana, not too far from the UNLV campus. I have friends that went there, graduated from there. I actually spoke at UNLV, if you can believe that, going way back. I didn't know she graduated from there. How am I going to put this the nice way? Not the most prestigious university. It's certainly not. I'd rather have a degree from the University of Pittsburgh than a University of UNLV. And knowing that she went there and that she graduated from there, and keep in mind, she just graduated from there in 2014. This is one more reason that people that young should not have, if they're popular, what are you going to do? But I'm not sure they have enough life experiences to really talk about politics. I'm just going to say that. I disc golf with many people around that age, guys that age, and I like them just fine, but they haven't done enough reading yet. They don't have enough life experiences yet. They don't have enough times arguing with people who disagree with them yet. And, you know, there's a reason that the founding fathers thought you needed to be 35 years old to be president. There's a reason. If those age people, if they want to take interest in politics, of course they should. They want to go volunteer for a politician, maybe that's a great idea too. All of those things, and reading and writing them. But to give a person that young that kind of platform, and I think the only reason she got it is because she's attractive, and even I can admit that. But before I really sign off on that, I'd like to see her without any makeup on. This is why it's dangerous to do something like that. That although it may get you a lot of clicks and a lot of hits and a lot of attention and everything, it's also more likely to put you in a bind because these people don't have all of their ideas worked out yet. Just like I know I didn't at that age. And I'm not going to say that I was the most mature 23-year-old or 24-year-old or anything like that. But I surely know more now than I did then. And I surely my political ideas are more well connected to each other than they were then. And I was a guy who went to a pretty good school, Grove City College, much better school than UNLV, frankly. I think I'm just obviously a little bit different of a person than Tomi Lahren is as well. I think I was way different then, and of course I'm way, way, way different now. This is one of those dangers. Now, having said all that, once you hire somebody like that, I think you have to keep that person even through times like this. I don't, for the record, I don't think she should have been on that station in the first place. Because of what you saw here, it was perfectly predictable that these things were going to happen with her because all she is a bomb thrower. Keep in mind this. This is probably the best example, and this her name always comes up when I think of Tomi Lahren. There's a reason Ann Coulter has never had her own radio show. There's a reason, and I'm sure that she's been offered it. There's a reason she's just a contributor at Fox News and doesn't have her own show. There's a reason that she's out on the speaking circuit instead of just being able to stay in one place and broadcast her views to the world from one place. Instead, she has to travel everywhere like an independent person. There is a reason that she's written all these books and, once again, doesn't have a show or something. Why? It's very dicey employing somebody like an Ann Coulter, because you never know what's going to come out of her mouth next. And that's part of her shtick. Without that, Ann Coulter, she's just nobody. And hers is a shtick that is worn thin. It's no different than, I'll give you a perfect example of this. Steve Martin. Huge, probably the most popular comedian in the world in the 1970s. Made millions and millions. It sold out 9,000, 10,000, 15,000 seat arenas for a comedy show, for stand-up. But you hear him talk about the work that he was doing back then, and you know he hasn't done stand-up comedy since 1979, 1980. He just had that hot period of like 73, 74 to 1980, and that was it. And he knew that his shtick was getting at least a little thin. And you go back and you watch his comedy back then, and it was like, I don't know if somebody in the year 2017 can really relate to it. Even though it was hugely popular back then, I don't know if people in 2017, young people, watch that and say, man, that's really funny. It's kind of weird. It looks kind of bizarre. It's a little bit of an acquired taste. But back then, it was huge. Luckily for Steve Martin, he knew that his act was getting a little old, and so he switched over to acting and greatly benefited from it. He was able to do comedy, but in movies. And a spectacular actor, Steve Martin is. Spectacular. He seems like a really good guy, too. But Ann Coulter's like that. Had the shtick, but then it runs thin. It runs thin. It gets old. So same way with Tomi Lahren, is that you never know what she's going to say. So you can't hire somebody like that and put them in a prominent position, because that person is ultimately going to put you, the boss, the owner of the station, the owner of the channel, in a very difficult position. And that's what she did. Me personally, I wouldn't have hired her in the first place. But on the other hand, I wouldn't have fired for this, because I would have known in the first place this is what I'm getting. It only makes Glenn Beck look stupid to me that then he gets rid of, fires her after this, because she's pro-choice. She made an idiot of herself on The View. But there have been, I mean, surely there were other reasons that she should have been gotten rid of well before this one. This was actually, I don't agree with her, but it's not like she was on there screaming at these women and dropping F-bombs and everything else. She was asked something and she stated it. I don't know personally what Tomi Lahren believes. I have no idea. But I don't think that you can get rid of her for this. You're the one who hired her. Now, if she was out there doing something else, if she was trashing Glenn Beck's name and the channel's name and other things, then yes, that she expressed an opinion, whatever, whether it's conservative or not, and then you get rid of her and permanently ban her, to me is strange. Once again, I know she's there. She's allowed to be fired for anything. That's the way the United States works. But I still continue to say that I would have used it as a teaching moment. I would have, as her boss, I would have sat her down and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a discussion about this. Because you know everybody's out there talking about this, Tomi. You know that. They're talking about you. They're talking about me. They're talking about what you said on The View. They're talking about what does she really believe. Why don't we just go on the air and talk about it? I'm going to talk to you. I'm not going to scold you. I'm not going to make fun of you or anything else. We're just going to talk about your appearance. We're going to give you an attempt to correct the record or clarify the record or whatever else, and we'll just have a discussion about this. That's what I would have done. What I know about her employment there, what I know about her, what I know about this situation, it could have been a very good teaching moment. That Glenn Beck didn't choose to do that, I can only read into it one of two things. One, he might have been looking to get rid of her for a long time and this was the final straw. Or he knew her well enough to know that she was never going to have that kind of conversation because Tomy's just going to be Tomy. And so you can't do that either. In either case, Tomy Lahren should have never, she should have never been on that station in the first place. Ever. Her thing should have been kept to YouTube. Let her build up a crowd there. Should have been doing her own blog and writing there and taking ownership for it, where she's the one who has to go out and get advertising instead of just getting a check from the Blaze. And in that way, it would have allowed her to hone her message. Because what I believe is that the reason she's such a bomb thrower is because I think that her ideas about law and government and everything are about as deep as a wading pool. See, to me, that's what I always think. I don't just think that about people on the right who I know. Now, I know Ann Coulter has a law degree and everything else, but she did some things before she was a law clerk and went to law school and did this and did that well before she was known as being the bomb thrower that she became. But I still do have this suspicion that people on the left and the right who have that kind of outrageousness, they do this because their political thoughts, if they actually had to sit down and write an essay about one of their political issues, their idea on a political issue, that you would read it, let's say, and make it 1,000 words, most of it would be gibberish. It would just be a word salad. That's my suspicion. That's what I've always thought about Jon Stewart. That's what I always thought about Bill Maher. That's what I've... Anybody who you put into that category, that's what I think. I put that kind of on the same side for the right as well. Tomy being one of them. Milo being another. I think if they really had to sit down and write a serious dissertation about a political issue, that it would be nothing. And then you'd find out that they're really not, I'm not saying they're not smart, it's just they're just out there saying stuff to get attention. And then you find out that kind of shtick doesn't translate to pen and paper. And I think that matters. I think it matters. And while I'm saying this, this very well could be one of the reasons that conservatism has suffered in the last, I think, 25 years. Is that, you know, it's very interesting to me. This is very, very interesting. Why is it that so many people who have made their money by conservatism speaking, meaning on radio shows, on Fox, were so eager to go along with Donald Trump, whereas the people who write about conservatism, meaning the people at National Review, Commentary Magazine, The Weekly Standard, and others, why is it all of they didn't go along with Donald Trump? That is something I just thought of that. Honest to God, I just came up with that within the last minute. Why is that? That's weird how those things happen. It's just weird when you start talking like this, all the ideas that can pop into your head. Tomy Lahren, Has she ever written any really, really deep stuff about conservatism, about culture, about philosophy, or anything else? Whereas when you read Kevin Williamson, you read Charles C.W. Cook, you read Jonah Goldberg, you read any of these people, they have a much better handle on their ideology than people who just talk do. And I would include Rush Limbaugh, of course, Sean Hannity, and all of these people. I think the difference is that when you talk, like I'm doing here, although I've written quite a bit about conservatism as well, when you talk like this, you can be more outrageous. You can use your inflection to talk up and get all loud, and then you can talk loud and twist people's emotions, speaking very silently. And then you can leave pauses. And then you can really accent stuff. Whereas in writing, you actually have to use words, and you can't do that. And that's what makes, I guess, writing fiction so tough, is that you have to emit emotion, get emotion out of people without that. So I think there's something there. I think that even though I do this podcast and have been doing it for several years, I think that writing conservatism keeps conservatism more true than going along with these people who are bomb throwers. And before you say, well, Ann Coulter, she wrote books too. Yeah, but her books are just extensions of her talking. Her books are just her speeches in readable form. That's all that is. I think that she had to pick one or the other. She'd be a speaker and not an author. There's no way that Ann Coulter would just give up going on Fox News and everything just to write books and write columns and things. There's no way she would do that. Her thing is being outrageous on camera talking. It's not writing books, even though she has written a bunch of them. I'm talking about serious talk, contemplations about conservatism in the 20th century and the 21st century, how it all connects back to Friedrich Hayek, Adam Smith, John Locke, stuff like that. That's not something that I don't think that Ann Coulter can do that. I don't think Tomi Lahren can do that. I don't think that Rush Limbaugh can do it. I don't think Sean Hannity can do it. Whereas people who write conservatism for a living, I think can, and it's better for all of us. Very interesting. I'm going to have to think about that. I can't believe it. See that sometimes how ideas happen right in the middle of a show, nothing in my notes about this, and it just comes to me. That's interesting. One more thing before I go. If you don't know, North Dakota has decided that the Second Amendment has just on itself says that people can't carry guns without any permits. So starting August 1st, which conveniently is my birthday, in North Dakota, as long as you don't have a criminal record, you will be allowed to carry a gun as long as you have your personal ID on you. While doing so, you will not need a permit. You will not have to go to some government agency like I had to do here in Florida to get an additional card to say I am a licensed carry conceal owner. Conceal, whatever you want to call it. You don't have to do that in North Dakota anymore. If you pass the background check, you automatically can carry that gun on you anywhere you go. That's how you win. Conservatives continue to win this argument. I just wish that we can convert it over to healthcare and a bunch of other topics. I haven't done that yet. But I got to go. You can find this show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern in the United States, on redstatetalkradio.com. You can also find this program at Podomatic and iTunes. Please listen, share, and subscribe. Once in a while, I'll talk about my other show, Unfound Missing Persons program. Got a two-parter going. The first part was this past Friday. The second part will be this coming Friday about the experience of three men in the Gulf of Mexico in 1994. Check that out. Find me on Twitter, USA Podcast or Unfound Podcast. I got to go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.